forum. We now come to the feedback and Q&A session. This session is led by Professor Lam Kin Chi, chairman of the panel. Now I would like to hand over the stage to Professor Lam.
Thank you. After a cup of warm tea, welcome back to this rather cool room. We are running a bit behind schedule, so I will urge you to be efficient in the use of time. And as I mentioned at the beginning, the purpose of the whole meeting is to let the administration hear the views from the experts, from the public. And before the tea break, we had 5 presentations from the consultant about the whole process. We have learned that the study is not quite yet halfway. They are still doing the study, and the objective is to work out a long-term strategy, and hence this meeting is very, very important. We've also heard inputs from different perspectives, from the health and most science planning, as well as the industrial perspective. Okay, now, you are now most welcome to touch on the issues that we have to face arising from the presentations, or including those which have not been raised in the presentations. I would urge you probably to refer to the back of the handout, which has listed a few key issues to be discussed, need for revising the AQOs, factors to be considered, how to implement the refined standards, or the need to improve air quality management framework. But as I said, you're not necessarily being constrained by these issues. Raise any which you think can help making a difference in air quality and in managing our air quality. Sitting on stage are those presenters before the tea break, and I don't need to introduce them again. May I ask the panelists, when they speak, please press the button. While English is used as the language, anyone who wishes to use Cantonese, please feel free to do so. May I ask if any of the panelists may have a headset in case a question is posed in Cantonese, right? Okay, let me then mention about the rules, no simple rules. Speak up, I think that's most important. Depending on the response, I may ask, identify 2 or 3, but let us, when you speak, please identify yourself and your affiliation. My role is to ensure that your views are being heard. So anyone would like to take the first go? Right, the lady in the middle, Luciana.
Yeah,
right.
I'm Luciana Wong. After hearing all the presentations, the message is quite clear that good air quality strategies, that the manufacturers are related to the good air quality strategy, like power, transport, and also industries. So I think the government needs to establish an individual intergovernmental authority to oversee the air quality strategy. It's not just EPD or the Environment Bureau can handle the whole issue. Mm. This is my point.
Oh, okay, right. Lucena has made a point. Probably there's not for an answer. I understand the administration will take note of that. If they wish to have any response, probably can wait till the end of the session. Yes? Bill?
Message back to your colleagues that just like in the earlier years of dealing with the environment, the transport department never showed up Now when we're dealing with these kinds of issues, neither does the Transport Department nor the Planning Department ever show up. And until there is a change where the Planning Department in particular, with the kinds of issues we've talked about, sees the health of the population as part of its responsibility, we're going to continue to have the kinds of bad planning that Ung Choi Nam pointed out. So if you would just take that message back, and I would hope that there's next time there's a forum, that someone with authority from the Planning Department, as well as the Transport Department, would have the courtesy to come to these meetings and indicate that at least they're aware that they have responsibilities in this area. Thank you.
Right, thank you. I can see that Bill has a lot of supporters. Yes, the gentleman.
Thank you, Chairman. Frederick Leung from Taiwan, Hong Kong. I note 2 points here. One of the issues is actually from the presenter's existing air quality is at certain level, some of which is exceeding, and also when the new WHO criteria is being implemented, then some of the stations is already exceeded, or some kind of rural stations is already exceeded. So this is an issue. And back to, based on this issue, the other thing is about the existing EIA processes that we may need to go through, for example, the committed or planned projects that have already used the original AQO criteria for the implementation or for cancellation, things like that. So how to deal with this issue for future, maybe say 5 years later when it's under the implementation, the emission is coming out, that kind of thing. So maybe the environmental concern would just, I hope maybe Sam could have a recommendations on what's going on to address these 2 points. Thank you.
Okay, now I think he has raised a very critical issue, particularly with regard to the EIA process. Now that we have heard 2 or 3 comments and remarks with some questions, I wonder if anyone on the panel would like to make any short response to those comments or questions. You may do so now, or if you wish to wait till the end, I would give another round of opportunity, please do so. Anyone who wish to make a quick response? Dora, I can see a smile. And
Chairman, I would like to respond to these questions. In developing the air quality objective, or the revised air quality objective, will take consideration of developing technology, and the revised AQO is not a very short-term process. Our study will extend to year 2047. So it is a very long time frame, and there are many ways to deal with individual issues, either by means of technology or policy measures.
Oh, okay, so that is indeed a very long-term perspective. Jolan, would you like
it's a very complicated issue. I haven't been able to find so-called a solution, although there's some suggestion. That is that we modify or change the AQ, tighten up the AQ, effectively tighten up the goalposts. The goalposts that we are using under the current EIA system, on assessing proposed developments, potential environmental impact, in this case on air quality. So you change the goalpost after the EIA done, then I think that wouldn't be a big problem. It really is not EIA problem anyway, because they pass through the process. But the problem is when in the future EIA process, if we have a new AQO, and then an EIA proposal comes in and we use this new proposal. But according to, if we use the WHO ultimate objective, then I don't think any road could be built, because the technology not reaching that level. So there's a suggestion that we could use different phases. Yeah, first phase, AQO, second, and so on. But should we use first phase or second or the third? Because we're talking about a role which will be around for the next perhaps the century. So we should use the ultimate WHO standard. But use this standard to assess the current proposed project would be a very tricky issue. So I don't think, I'm not sure how to resolve this and that. But of course, one to notice that the EIA, in Hong Kong, we use AQO for EIA assessment. But there's a question of whether we should use AQO as such, because AQO is the objective, it's not a, the three is not a standard. Standard is a kind of emission standard, you can clearly identify the source and the emission. But AQ, but EIA, we actually look at the air quality in this discussion, the air quality impact at this sensitive reservoir. So it's very much on how far the sensitive reservoir away from the road. Ah. So when you use AQO for this assessment, whether that is appropriate. We never thought of this an issue in Hong Kong. We simply adopt the AQO for that many years since the EIA ordinance endorsed. In fact, whether we should have an AQO for our overall air quality objective, and whether we should have an air quality criteria for a separate criteria for EIA, that I think we need to need to think of. That means it's not only review AQO. We might end up with an AQO for the society for policy, driving for policy, or then we have criteria for EIA, and then we might have standard for emission and so on. So we might end up with three category of, you know, kind of standard or objective.
I can see a hand from Professor Wong.
Chairman, let me perhaps supplement by perhaps explaining to Dr. Ng about the air quality objective the purpose of air quality objective, as explained earlier on in my talk, is about protection of public health. So I have been in the ACE for quite a few years now, but I'm not very familiar with the EIA process myself. I know Dr. Ng has been heading that committee for quite a while, but I've always been kind of skeptical. What is the purpose of EIA? What's the purpose? You want to preserve the environment. You want to ensure that the environment is minimally affected by the development, right? So, human health, the effect on human health is certainly one criteria that you need to consider very seriously. Now, why do you want to build a road? Why do you want to build a road? You want to build a road for transportation purpose. It's not a road in itself, but it's the amount of vehicles, it's the amount of pollution associated with the construction of a road that matters. So what would be the impact of that, the consequence of building a road on the air quality? I think that is what you need to look into. And our AQO, let me tell you, our AQO was formulated in 1987, during a time when the Environmental Protection Department was set up. In 19, Professor Hedley will know this history. In 10 years ago, we were asked by the EPD to review the AQO. 10 years ago, 1996. And then we did. We had a lot of quarrels with Professor Hedley, and we spent 1.5 years. We finally produced something. We produced a report. The report was, I don't know, it disappeared. Mysteriously disappeared in thin air. It never saw the light of day. Never mind that, now it's 2007, we got another chance. We got another go. We are proceeding along the right direction. So, and you must remember, what is the purpose of the AQO? If the EIA, the purpose of EIA is to protect the environment, and the environment includes the health of individuals who live in the environment, then that is the fact, that is the kind of objective criteria you need to consider, because that ultimately will be a measure of the impact of health to the environment, to the people in the environment affected by the development. So we do not change goalposts for the sake of development. Rather, development has to suit the health of the environment. be it human or dragonfly or freshwater fish or whatever, or flora or fauna. Thank you.
I can now see that why we have yes, why we have a tea break. And so that with a cup of warm tea, the discussion would be warmed up. And the discussion has become more and more lively. Right.
Now, I'm not objecting tighten the goalpost or yeah. What I'm saying is there's a technical issue, because for using this road as an example, whether the road can be built under the EI system, it depends on whether there are people living close to it or away from it, because EIA is an impact assessment. So a road could be very polluting, but if there's no one living there, it could be built. Because the EIA is based on impact on the air sensitive receiver around the area. So it doesn't mean it passed the EIA law, the EIA regulation under current system, that the road actually is cleaner than another road. It just very much depends on whether there's a sensitive receiver around. If there's a sensitive receiver closer to it, then the chance of building roads much smaller, because it might not be able to resolve it. But if this out of nowhere, then the chance of building is very is much bigger. But so I said this is the problem of using this general ATO for a EI assessment. And that's an issue that we need to find out. I'm not saying that we should not tighten up or whether we could stick to the same the current system. No problem, because we've been using this system for years. But what I'm trying to say is there is a different technical issue that we need to face.
Okay. I'm sure that issue has to be considered. It cannot be overlooked.
I actually want to touch on another point, because in Hong Kong, practically, we use at least the AQO at least for two purposes, certainly on EIA, and I agree with Professor Wong, that intention of the EIA is for improvement and protection, but then it's also for risk communication. Because EIA is, in a sense, tied up with our API system, although it's not legally required to do so. But the AQO, that particular 24-hour AQO, is related to the API. And right now, without revising that, we are miscommunicating the risk. A lot of time when people feel that, okay, the air quality, air pollution index, 100, they feel, okay, it's safe. But if you look at the existing research from the medical community, that's not true. And we are miscommunicating, and we are not telling the community how much damage they're experiencing. I think, actually, in the next phase, I hope the consultant will actually look at maybe do we need to decompose, or do we need another mechanism? How to communicate that risk? Or maybe, okay, we use the AQ, the WHO air quality guidelines for reporting risk, and then use their interim target, a sliding interim target for EIA application. But I think those are things that we certainly have to look at. Because if it's the system that we have right now, basically mingling these two purposes up. And I think it's important, if we don't think we can go to the WHO air quality guidelines right at the present, then we at least communicate the risk. I don't think we can actually delay to do that, because without knowing the risk, we can't tell people that they should actually do more for their environment, not for their environment, actually doing more for themselves.
Okay, now given that the purpose of the forum is to listen to public views, so after shift from the panel to the floor, I've seen several hands. The lady in the middle first. Oh, I see. Then the gentleman, lady first.
Looking at the objectives Hong Kong has set for the air quality, is all about ambient air concentration. I would like to take the panel's attention to the total quantity control, because my grandma used to tell me you can wash your muddy feet in the river and in 10 miles it's going to be cleaned by itself. But my grandma won't say that today because the population in Hong Kong is the population density in Hong Kong is the highest in the world. And so by the same token, if there's a lot of emission into the air and the air cannot purify itself by the mechanism of natural process, so it won't get clean even you attend the concentration here. So what is the total quantity control into these objectives? Have Hong Kong EPD thought about this?
Okay, now I think we note the question first, and probably in the interest of time, I take another question, the gentleman in the middle.
During the talks, there are the speakers who raised the important issue that the AQO, the National Ambient Air Quality Standard in the U.S., deliberately include a phrase that it is not related to technological and economical feasibility. I want to know if this is the consensus that we are taking, or it is just something that still needs to be debated within the committee. So that's the first question. And the second question is, if economic and technological feasibility is considered, will your committee present a few scenarios or just one set of AQO, because the strategies for meeting these standards will be very much different. So I don't know, maybe any one of the panel members can.
Okay, now we have a question from the lady and two more from the gentleman. I wonder if anyone on the panel would like to make brief response to those. Okay, firstly Professor Wong and then Mr. Chen.
Let me respond to Professor Chen, right? I think in the WHO process, in its formulation of the air quality guidelines, it reviews evidence of impact of air pollution on health, not on technology, not on cost. Okay, so the interim targets, I probably need Sam to look into the reason why, the actual reason why the proposed two interim targets. But interim targets are not there for health reasons. It's there, I believe. I'm not involved in the process myself, but I believe it's for a reason, for a more pragmatic reason, that countries may achieve a certain level, rather than a seemingly inachievable goal in the future. So I think that is the purpose. But to me, I don't think the WHO guideline is in any way related to cost or technological concerns. Whether in our current review this is supposed to be done, we'll see from the consultants and then from the advisory panel, I think. Thank you.
Mr. Chen?
Yes. Right. Thank you, Chairman. Just a quick response to the first questions posed by this lady. As a matter of fact, an important part of our strategy to deal with the air pollution problem in Hong Kong is agreement reached with the Guangdong authorities to reduce drastically the amount of air pollutants by between 20 to 55% by 2010. So we certainly agree that it is important to manage the total amount of emissions for the entire PRD region, and that would form a very important part of our overall strategy.
Sam?
I just want to make one point to reinforce Professor Wong's comment. The WHO AQG is a purely health-based air quality standard. the introduction of the interim target to facilitate stage approach to progressive achievement towards the AQG.
Let me make an apology. I've forgotten to introduce Mr. Carson Chen, his Deputy Secretary from the Bureau. Now, I have taken a few questions on this side. I think I've seen the hand from Professor Hadley, and then I should turn to the other side to ensure that I'm not lopsided. Professor Hadley.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd like to pose one or two questions to the panel, if I may. First, Mr. Choi, you made some reference to the European limit values, and you said, without qualifying your statement, that they were not the same as the WHO guidelines. Would you like to elaborate on that? I think it's important not to create the impression that different jurisdictions select different limit values for health reasons. The reason that the European Community or, for example, the US EPA is having a debate, not to say a tremendous row and struggle, is because of the battle between the health authorities and the vested interests. So I think we should be clear about that. My second question is to anybody, because we've heard so much about 2010. I don't understand how the government is now extrapolating with confidence that the stated emission reductions will lead to achievement of the Hong Kong 1987 AQOs. And that confidence was not reflected by the previous Minister for the Environment, Dr. Sarah Liao, when she repeated many times, we will do this on a, quote, best endeavor basis, unquote. There seems to have been a change here in the style of presentation. I mean, first, I would have thought there was uncertainty about achieving the reduction in the emissions, but second, I don't know what the evidence is, the methodology, the models, or whatever, that leads people with confidence to suggest that we would achieve the AQOs. I mean, one thing that has to be said is that even if we achieve the AQOs by 2010, that we need to remind ourselves that most of the measured health impact on this population is occurring at levels well below the AQOs. So achieving the Hong Kong AQOs by 2010 is not a milestone to celebrate. My third question, if I may, is to the panel. What I'm hearing and what really concerns me is that so many things are over the horizon. I mean, 2010 is a significant time away. As someone else said, the AQO review is not going to report till 2009. And we all know how long it takes to take action, let alone implement and enforce that kind of report. Sam just staggered me by telling me that, in fact, we're not talking about a three-year timescale here, but half a century. I shall be 107 in 2047. I'll not make that because of air quality. What I want to say first of all is that. What we need are more defining moments in Hong Kong. TW and Ng Chiu Nam pointed to the 1st of July 1990 fuel sulfur restriction. That was a defining moment in Hong Kong. It is on the world map of pollution abatement. There's more interest in that overseas than there is here. I could also point to the Utah steel mill closure in 1986, which kept children aged 0 to 5 out of hospital with pneumonia, bronchitis, and pleurisy, and so on. I could point to the Dublin coal sale ban in 1990, huge impact on the health of that population. So we have one of the most interesting and virtually unique interventions in this town. We should be looking for new, hugely effective defining moments, not talking about half a century. I mean, I'd like the panel to suggest to us what these might be. I mean, a sulfur emission control area for marine pollution abatement might be one. Maybe cross-boundary flow of traffic. Certainly other traffic issues, which you've all mentioned, and fuel standards. Maybe flue gas desulfurization. Trucks, buses. I'm told that the proportion of our Euro 4 buses is less than 10%. I mean, these are staggering statistics. Let's get on with this. Not 2047, please.
Oh, okay, now, Professor Hedy has raised a few questions, and I think, firstly, Mrs. Choi, would you like to...
I'll make a response to the first question. When I said the EU limit values, when I say currently, the EU is reviewing the limit value, and it is not the same as the WHO. There is a reason for that. The reason for that is because of the time lag. The EU is a very big region with many countries, and it takes a long time for them to review their standards. And when they review their limit value, the WHO AQG was not published yet. So I'm pretty sure, as I mentioned in the second point of my slide, that when they next review their limit value, they would take consideration of WHO AKG into consideration.
With regard to the second or third question or observations, I wonder anyone on the panel would like to make a Mr. Chen?
A quick response to the second question. Well, we certainly agree with Professor Hatney's suggestion that achieving the 2.10 reduction target is not the end of the story. Now, it is of course a very important milestone in our overall strategy to improve the regional air quality. So, but after 2010, we still have to do a lot. And that's why we have commissioned this current study, not only to look into the AQO, but also to recommend a comprehensive strategy, a string of measures that recommended to the administration for achieving this new set of AQO.
Right.
I just want to supplement that into answering partially the third question. In doing so, to develop an air management strategy, we have to assess all different scenarios. When I mentioned that we have to use computer simulation to determine the different contribution from different industrial sectors and different contribution from PRD and Hong Kong, this is exactly what we need to do and determine what measures would be able to achieve the air quality objective that we decide to pursue.
Okay, now
just a quick comment. Again, based on my observation, partly in experience in being involved in the AC and so on over the years, Professor Hatney pointed out that there's some successful case on source emission source control, and you can really see the impact, the positive impact from it. So the point I would like to raise is that actually, if you look at obviously environmental measures put forward to us, those could be done by EPD, probably been done, majority of those been already carried out. Not many governments in the world would spend so much money to compensate a taxi driver and minibus drivers to switch the fuel. There's some need to be done, because they control the marine vehicles and so on. But what, so I would say, they're probably getting 80% or even 90%, but they still got some, you know, improvement to be to do. But controlling air quality or improving our air quality need to be done by other departments as well. If you look at the planning and other aspects, I will give them failure. Because in planning, air quality not yet a major issue, or not yet in the planning parameter when we consider a development. So it's not been addressed, because it's not yet a real sort of planning issue, particularly at the local level. And so we see the problem that I pointed out, that over a year the incremental impact from all this development. And now we've gone to the stage that it's so with us, the impact. But to resolve it, it takes time, it probably takes decades. You can't knock down a building after it's built. You have to wait 80 years probably until it redevelops. So this is the problem that we're facing. This ventilation problem, it will take decades to resolve. But we've not yet resolved trying to resolve it, because it's not yet a planning parameter, air quality or ventilation in small scale development. It's only development of over 1 hectare or something that require ventilation, air ventilation assessment. Smaller development not needed.
May I just allow to make a quick response, and then Mr. Lancaster.
Well, I just want to comment. We talk about strategy, but I think in the review, again, I emphasize that, strategy, technology, we can look at what we have now. But I think it's very important to also talk about framework. Because when we look at the EU, look at the US, look at many other countries, it's a scheduled review system. And 5 years later, what type of technology will be available, we don't know. So I think that's number one point. Instead of just talk about, okay, we want to look at what we can have now, I think even more important to establish this framework, and I want the consultant really seriously consider that. The second one is, I certainly agree with Shonam that, maybe it's not EPD can do it, but we see it to the government. I mean, if it is planning department or the transport department or the chief executive office need to do it, I don't think from the public we want to really differentiate and write letters to different groups. So I think again, if there are there are things that we can do, maybe not under the jurisdiction of the EPD, then I still think that the government or the EPD should suggest it to the other department.
Okay. Mr. Lancaster?
I'd just like to make an observation in relation to Professor Headley's comments about interim targets. I think the purpose of interim targets is to enable progress to be made in a way that keeps choices open and smooths out the impact. We do need to make progress towards an end goal. If we try and reach that goal in a hurry, our choices are much more limited, and the impact that we would suffer is much greater. So by enabling careful planning and enabling time for development of alternatives, then we can achieve our target over a longer time frame, but making steady progress. I think just to highlight some examples to illustrate that, in the 1990s, there were a number of interventions in Hong Kong. Professor Headley has mentioned the change in fuel standards. During that time, we went through dramatic change in the energy sector in Hong Kong as well. We had an opportunity when we built new generating facilities to build nuclear-powered facilities and also natural gas-powered facilities. They came at the right time as we needed new capacity. We were able to take advantage of those choices, and we were able to implement that change in a way that didn't dramatically disrupt the energy supply sector. So it's an illustration that generally when we are implementing new standards, lead time is necessary in order that we can take advantage of options, that we can open up our choices and not be limited in the options that are available. And that careful planning does need to be factored into the development of the interim timetable.
Thank you, Mr. Lancaster. I think I can take more questions from the floor. Oh, okay. Gentleman on that side, right.
Hi, I am Xiang Ding. I'm from King George V School in Hong Kong. And I have a question for Mr. Lancaster, if I may. I noticed that you mentioned in your presentation that CLP supports clean energy development in Hong Kong, and that he in particular mentioned that there are no quick fixes to the problem, and that new technology and new fuel involve long implementation lead times. And in his presentation, you mentioned, you highlighted some of the challenges that the Hong Kong energy sector is facing right now in terms of developing clean fuel. I was wondering if you could elaborate on some of your long-term plans at CLP and how you plan, because we all know that because oil and all that is going to run out and coal is a very unclean source, what exactly are your long-term plans for providing energy in Hong Kong?
Mr. Lancaster?
Okay. I'd be happy to elaborate on our future plans. Our energy mix in Hong Kong, as I showed, is a combination of nuclear power, natural gas, and coal. And because we are needing to import all of our fuel, we see that a balanced mix of fuels is going to be important to us for quite some time. So our aim is to increase the amount of natural gas in our fuel mix. Natural gas is the cleanest fuel that we can use. So our first priority is to develop access to natural gas. We need to import it. It does need to come from long distances. And with the construction of some infrastructure in Hong Kong, we can access large quantities of natural gas that will be able to replace some of the coal that we're currently using. Longer term, the CLP group has announced a plan to reduce the carbon intensity of our energy production. So we have set ourselves targets that also have a long time frame of 2050, but we have set ourselves interim targets as well at 2010 and at 2035. The aim is to use low carbon and non-carbon producing energy forms, and that would primarily be nuclear power and renewable energy. So we'll be developing those energy sources into the future as opportunities arise. Beyond that, we see that by the middle of the 2020s, that carbon capture and storage may well be a viable technology, in which case coal-fired electricity production, which currently can be produced, there's technology available today to extract the particulates, the sulfur dioxide and the nitrogen oxide. We see that by the middle of the 2020s that the technology would be mature for eliminating carbon from coal. So the coal would still play a role, but in a different form.
Okay. Okay, the gentleman in the middle, right? Now, I think we only have about 10 more minutes discussion, so make the best use of time.
I would like to take this opportunity to say that from time to time we have heard from the media, probably from government officials as well, that air pollution in Hong Kong, or maybe I should rephrase it, 80% of the air pollution in Hong Kong is attributable to PRD. Okay, so this is just a statement related to the emission inventory results. But unfortunately, we have heard of about this statement from time to time, including official statements from the government. Now, Professor Alex Brown has already mentioned that there is a growing evidence that local air pollution contribute more than 20%. So I hope the government can stop from now on making a statement that 80% of pollution in Hong Kong is from PRD. Thank you.
Right. I think Professor Lau's message is loud and clear that whatever you do locally in Hong Kong, that can help improve the air quality. I've seen a hand from the gentleman on that side.
Hello, Peter Timer from City University.
we're having a seminar on air quality, but seem to spend most of the time talking about air pollution. At the moment, I would like to take up Professor Lau's important comment. Really, we're talking about to what extent can we lie to the general public of Hong Kong about the chronic effects of air pollution upon their health, because that is what we're doing at the present time. Now, as Professor Lau said, if we have new AQO, okay, they will be implemented on a gradual basis, of course. But we must retain the correct health descriptor. We must tell the general public actually what is happening to their health. Otherwise, there will be no action taken to clean up this dirty mess. So I just want to reiterate Professor Lau's very important point. Keep the health descriptors accurate.
Okay, Professor Tanner has a clear and strong message too. Any comments on the air quality parameter? Okay, Professor Hedley. Right.
Thank you, Chairman. I'd just like to make a response to Richard's riposte to me. I accept, of course, that whatever is done needs to be done on the basis of proper planning. I suppose I would have been less energized by your response if you'd been saying that in 1997 or 2000 or even 2003. But here we are in 2007 and we are looking down the road towards 2010, and then there's a lot of uncertainty beyond that. Alexis has said we need a framework. My question to you or the panel is, to what extent should a clear system of accountability be part of that framework? Because if you look in other jurisdictions, that is now the name of the game. I mean, to what extent, when you produce a strategic plan for pollution abatement, to what extent should that be set against the avoidable illnesses and deaths which will occur as a result of any undue delay? I mean, we must keep this health issue right at the forefront. Yesterday, we went to this air summit. Nobody mentioned a single health outcome. I mean, you might have thought that we were talking about something strange in the ether, which, you know, was indefinable and perhaps nothing more than an irritant, not something that causes heart attacks, strokes, pneumonia, chronic obstructive lung disease, irreversible damage to the lungs of growing children, and we're raising cohorts of them in this town right now, and of course throughout the whole of Greater China. So, yes, I hear what you say, but can we think about what system of accountability, and might that even be part of the report which Mr. Choi is going to steer to this government? Because we've had an awful job translating the health outcome database into something which becomes part of the driver of new policies. Thank you.
Okay. Now, I think because we have only about 5 to 6 minutes more, probably I should take more questions or comments, at the end of which then I would invite those on the panel to make brief responses they would have the last say. How's that? Okay. So, any further comments or questions from the floor? Then the earlier question was posed to Mr. Choi. Was it? Sam, would you like to?
Certainly, when we develop scenario for evaluations, we will take account the WHO AQG as a reference base, as well as a cost-benefit balance approach, and we will weigh between the difference. We will present the result to our client, and this will form the basis of our recommendations and discussion with the client. So health effect of poor air quality or improved air quality would be weighted.
Right.
Any questions or comments from the floor? If not, then probably I would ask those on the panel, if they wish, to make any final comments or remarks on the questions raised or comments raised. Okay, Professor Lau.
Yeah, Professor Hartley talked about the question of framework and accountability. I think we have worked with the mainland colleagues a lot, and I think this year it apparently in the new, I think, 5-year plan, the accountability issue now really come into the forefront. And I think we had different meetings with them, and in the power sector, we were told that, well, now they take the sulfur reduction much more seriously because they will be held accountable. I don't know, this may not necessarily be the system that we adopt in Hong Kong. We can use a review or what kind of framework, but I certainly agree that some type of at least assessment or benefit analysis would be very helpful, because otherwise, I'm not a person expert in public administration. I don't know what is the most effective way of doing this type of thing. But actually understanding the strategy and their benefit and assessing whether we are doing things right. In the U.S., there's certainly cases where they initially thought that controlling one emission is good, but then turn out it may not be true. So I think it may not be I would say, held them accountable in certain sense, but review in the framework and also look at the whether we actually achieve the planned target. Like, I would be very interested to go into 2010 and see what is the concentration level, and I would wait.
Right. Professor Wong?
I'd like to make several points. Now, one is about the EIA regarding Chiu Nam's comment on the EIA and sanctions receiver. Certainly, the EIA, if you talk about a local project and a local EIA of that particular project, then you look into the sanctions receivers. And there's no definition as to where the sensitive receiver has to be located, or the minimal distance of the sensitive receiver from your project, right? So, but I think the bottom line really, the bottom line is that the air quality objective, if it is used as a yardstick to measure the health impact of the sensitive receiver, then it's got to be the proper yardstick. It should not be a yardstick which you move in order to incorporate development. So that's one point. The next thing I want to say about is the time frame, which Professor Hedley is worried about. It has been suggested that, well, maybe we have to wait until 2047. And also, we know that this is something which takes time. Mr. Rankin said that takes time for technology to develop and all that, and John said, well, the buildings are there to be, they're there for 80 years. I really need to emphasize the urgency of the issue. We don't have to wait for the consultancy report to be fully completed and ratified and agreed by the general public in order for us to act. I think there are already actions which we know will work to greater or less extent. Like marine fuel control, bam, you can achieve a very good result, because we know that they're using obnoxious fuel, so something which we can do immediately. So I don't really think that it's really that slow for us to change. And also, what one need to remember that when we talk about air pollution control and cost, we always, even yesterday, I heard from the news. I didn't go to the conference, but Dr. Edgar Chang was saying, there's certain action costs certain resources, but we must not
forget the fact that these resources put into improving our air quality also gives us benefits in money terms, benefits in terms of life saved, in terms of diseases prevented. These are real costs. These are real costs to the community. Because otherwise, we would have to spend those costs. We would have to spend those resources in treating patients and so on. So these are real savings. So when we talk about the time frame of control, when we talk about, well, it takes years because, you know, because this is an expensive exercise, I disagree. Because actually, it makes commercial sense. I mean, I can refer to the example of a development of the home ownership scheme, which has never been occupied, and the developer wants to knock it down. Why? Because it makes economic sense to them. So I think for air pollution control, it also makes economic sense. We need to do quickly. So that is one thing. The third thing, which the last point I would like to kind of respond to the lady's comment about the lack of multidisciplinary approach. I noticed that the planning department is not there, highways not here, who else? Buildings not here, health not here. So I mean, it's really an EPD show, and I don't like it. Now the ABAS, the buildings department, did the ABAS, the air ventilation assessment scheme, only after as a response to a dire epidemic, SARS. So something like air pollution, they don't see the urgency because they really need something like SARS to wake them up. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor Wong. Now, I think in the interest of time, only quick comments of 1 minute or so. Oh, okay.
No,
right.
Just quick. I can see the frustration. I also have the frustration that we urgently need action, in particular on controlled development. But from the recent JR case or the Tampan board lost the case at the court, then you can see that obviously institutional constraint. Even actually, Tampan board have some flexibility while we consider a development plan based on the planning merit and so on. But even that, the court, the judge didn't buy in. So that's clear, unless you change the law. But that takes time. So you can see there's still a clear institutional constraint. And then secondly, on the planning, planning is very important to address the more generic long-term issue. So in this particular case, like you used the example that I used in the 2030 study, which is a long term, now it's a medium term planning study, it's still using a fit on demand approach, what I call fit on demand. That means if there is growing population, then we have to prepare the scenario. And there could be several development scenarios to fit the need, and we pick the most environmental friendly one. Okay, but that is not perhaps the type of planning that we want. We want to more proactive, like we have to cap the or we have to have energy efficiency target, or we have to cap population and so on. And that is not the approach that's taken in the 2030. Okay, then you can blame, oh, it's useless. But this is under the current institutional or political priority setting. You have to change your priority, okay? But change your priority is a political, political decision. If you're able to persuade from the government to the legislator that air quality is the top priority, then it will change everything. Correct the institutional constraint and focus on the air quality needs, for example. But we're not reaching that point yet, unfortunately. That's a frustration that I have. I probably have more frustration than many because I'm involved in a number of processes. On EIA, the problem of the EIA currently, EIA is it is an intact assessment. It's very much, as I said earlier, that depends on the locality of the sensitive reservoir. And there's a standard practice to identify sensory receiver. So one thing tries to say is, if you build a road with no residents in the area, even the road create lots of pollution, it still passed the test. But it happened to have a sensory receiver around, then it have to assess the impact. I'm not complaining that protecting the sensory reserve is important, but using this criteria, we might not be able to compare actually the performance of a road, this road and the other road, because it very much depends on where the location or where the sensory reserve are. That is the limitation of the current EIA approach. So this is perhaps a EIA problem more than an AQO problem, so I shouldn't put too much effort on this. Okay, I think I'm...
Thank you.
This.
Last chance for anyone on the panel who hasn't spoken the final word. Okay? Sam?
I just want to make one more comment. If you have further comments, please use this email address to send us your views. It's all welcome. Thanks.
Mr. Choi has spoken what I should say. Now I think... in the interest of time, I have to draw the forum and the discussion to a close. You can understand why I chose to be the moderator, because I don't have to make a presentation, I don't have to face all these difficult but very meaningful questions. Now, as said at the beginning, this forum is on the review of the AQO, which is commissioned by the administration, being undertaken by the consultant. They are not quite yet half through. The purpose of the meeting today is to hear your views. I'm sure that they have taken back your views, and they will continue to work on that. And so this is not the end, this is rather the beginning, and we all look forward to hearing further progress from them, and so that the administration, the government, can work out a more long-term is a key word over there, strategy for Hong Kong. Despite the diversity of views expressed, I can certainly detect certain common threads from the discussion today. There is little dispute at all that this is an urgent task. We have only a minute to midnight. And that also calls for concerted efforts from various departments and actions that are well considered, actions that are underscored by determination and vision. And so I've also heard a message that in working out the long-term ultimate guidelines, and health should be a key consideration. We all understand that there are difficulties to overcome. There is no pretense that it's going to be an easy job, and in any case, we must go step by step, and we all agree that we must begin now. I think this is the challenge that's coming out of today's discussion. The future of Hong Kong and the well-being of the 7 million people depend on whether or not we can manage the air quality issue. On this note, I wish to thank you all. I wish to thank all the 5 speakers for their insightful analysis, and to thank you all most sincerely for taking part in this lively and fruitful discussion. You have indeed made my job as the moderator a very pleasant one. And I wait with hope for the coming of a new era in which we can not only live well, but also we can enjoy the blue skies every day. Thank you for coming. And don't forget, they haven't completed the job yet. So provide your feedback and input to them. I'm sure that the administration will listen to those views. Thanks for coming.